and a warning of how demands on the Avatar could steal away time in the blink of an eye. Kiyoshi hadn't been to the North Pole yet. She was lucky that Rangi wasn't angry at her for not visiting. She thought about bringing up Dairin's cryptic actions in the gallery, but didn't. Less out of concern for his wishes, and more because she and Rangi had more important things to talk about. Kiyoshi turned to Jinpa. "Can you give us some time alone?" she asked him, motioning at the door. "Not so fast," Rangi said. "Report, please, Brother Jinpa." The monk stepped forward like a first-day recruit and addressed her directly, completely bypassing Kiyoshi.
"She hasn't been eating properly, despite my repeated admonitions."
"Hmm," Rangi pressed her lips together in disapproval. "She can be stubborn like that." "Hey," Kiyoshi said. "Don't talk about me like I'm not here." Jinpa continued to count out various offenses on his thumb and fingers, bending them back one by one.
"She barely gets any sleep. I'll find her passed out late at night, on top of a book or a map or a manual. She doesn't give herself enough time to recover from her injuries. And she insists on reacting to random reports of violence throughout the Earth Kingdom in person. Do you know how hard it is to manage her schedule when she does that?"
Out of all her fears for this visit, Kiyoshi hadn't been prepared for this scenario, her secretary and her bodyguard ganging up on her.
"Have you two been riding each other behind my back?"
"Only the one time," Rangi said. "I sent Jinpa a letter at the same time as I sent your invitation. It was the only way I would get a truthful update on whether you've been taking care of yourself. Apparently you haven't."
"She hasn't," Jinpa confirmed. "Quite the opposite, in fact. If I didn't know any better, I would say she's intentionally seeking out the most dangerous situations and hurling herself into them without any regard for her own safety."
"That's not true."
"Oh, so then I suppose you fell neck first into a sharp object by accident?" Rangi said. A deep scowl crossed her features. "Don't think I haven't noticed your new scars. It's like you're ruining my favorite parts on purpose."
Jinpa wiped his eyes, the release making him emotional.
"She is so taxing," he said into his fist, sniffling a little.
Rangi got up from the bed and patted him on the back.
I know she is. She's the worst. You've done a heroic job taking care of her, and I'm here to help you now."
"I am the Avatar,"
Kiyoshi said in a desperate last resort to shield herself from further judgment.
"Not some helpless child."
The way she stamped her foot undercut her message. Rangi and Jinpa gave each other a squint.
"Are we sure about that? I'm not so sure."
Kiyoshi's head hurt. She had spent long months building fortifications around herself, establishing a reputation and self-image in the Earth Kingdom as someone not to be trifled with. It had taken Rangi less than an hour in the Fire Nation to tear those walls down and invite Jinpa inside. Jinpa's growing grin told her this was revenge, glorious revenge, aged like fine wine until the perfect moment. This was payback for all the times she'd ordered him to drop the conversation about her injuries or ignored his reminders to put the books away and get some rest. She finally figured out how she felt about the young man who'd been there quietly in the background, providing her care with grace and compassion. He was a dirty snitch.
"You can't talk about me like this," Kiyoshi fumed, pointing her finger at Jinpa.
In the Daofei Code, snitches were punished by thunderbolts and knives.
"I am your boss."
"That may be, but she's clearly the one in charge."
He tipped his bald head at Rangi, positively gleeful with the new method of avatar management he'd been gifted.
"If squealing is what it takes to keep you healthy, then slap me with a feather and call me a pig chicken."
"Get out,"
Yoshi snapped.
Jinpa shared another knowing smile with Rongi as he backed out the door. Look at her, trying to be tough. How adorable.
And then, suddenly, for the first time in a long time, Kiyoshi and Rongi were alone together. It was like being granted a wish from a spirit before she was ready. Kiyoshi felt the need to choose her words carefully, or else her boon would vanish. Rongi helped her with the selection.
How are things back at the mansion? She asked quietly.
She'd lived there alongside Kiyoshi. Yokoya had been her home, too, until that night they fled together into the storm.
Less busy.
The mansion was no longer the vibrant, bustling place it was during Kiyoshi's servant days. Much of the staff had quit immediately after the Earth King's investigators closed the poisoning case. As the new master of the estate, Kiyoshi didn't replace them, not wanting to manage a large household anyway, which left most of the halls empty and the gardens untended. The villagers avoided the hollowed-out manor and called it an unlucky place.
Auntie Mui is still there, doing what she can. I don't know why she hasn't left yet.
Your why? Rongi looked pained and frustrated, as if an old injury that should have long since healed had been prodded too hard.
She's trying to support you, Kiyoshi.
She was going to say more on the matter, but decided to hold it for another day. Their next topic needed every possible inch of space cleared around it before they could approach. For a while, the two of them stared at the same patch of red threads woven into the rug. Again, Rongi got there first.
Yun?
One of the promises that Kiyoshi had made to Rongi before she boarded the ship bound for the frigid reaches of the north was that she would find their friend, no matter what it took. The declaration had been slipped in among tears and embraces so tight Kiyoshi's shoulders ached for days afterward. The witnesses were the dock workers and sailors weaving around them on the pier, grumbling at their obliviousness to anything but each other. But in the expanse of the Earth Kingdom, the force of her vow had dissipated. She'd quickly learned that without some kind of edge, it was functionally impossible to find a single person in the depths of the largest continent. Even one as famous as Yun had been. She hadn't a Shirshu to track his scent, nor spiritual trigrams to read for his location. Asking commoners in the villages she visited in the course of her avatar duties if they'd seen a particular earthbender was a laughable exercise.
Greyhand? Sure, my cousin's got a skin problem like that.
Looking back on it now, her grand ambitions had been reduced to pathetic letter-writing campaigns to sages who had no inclination to help. And why would they? Liu Beifong wasn't the only one who preferred to believe he was dead.
I thought if I could figure out how he survived, it might give me a lead, Kiyoshi said.
But every story I found of people taken bodily by spirits was a folk tale, and none of them live. I don't have an explanation for how he came back, or why he changed. She rubbed her eyes. The sting of reliving her failures made it hard to see straight. The closest piece of information I could find was an account of a spirit possessing the son of a provincial governor during the Hao Dynasty. It said a dragon bird flew through his body, altered his physical appearance, and gave him unusual abilities.
Is that the answer? Rongi said. Maybe people touched by spirits can pass through the boundaries between the spirit world and the human realm easier than others.
It's hard to say. The text didn't mention crossing between worlds. It just said the boy sprouted feathers and a beak when the dragon bird flew into him. Yun didn't look any different on the outside when I saw him in Qin Chao, but he's not the same as before. I just know it. Kiyoshi felt like screaming in the red chamber.
This was the best she had done for their friend. An old story and a wild guess. She couldn't pretend in front of Rangi. The full weight of her futile, wasted efforts crushed down on her shoulders.
Kyoshi, have you ever considered that he's moved on?
She looked up at Rangi's question, confused. From what?
From us.
Rangi swallowed, the words hurting her as she spoke them.
Based on what you've told me, I don't believe he wants to be found.
She held up a hand to cut off Kyoshi's protest.
Think about it. There are numerous ways he could have gotten in contact with the Avatar. He knows the sages of the Earth Kingdom. He could have left a message with them. The fact you haven't heard from him yet is telling.
Kyoshi could believe the nobles of the Earth Kingdom wanted to stick their heads in the sand when it came to Yun. But Rangi? How could she?
You're talking about forgetting him, Kyoshi said, her breath already shortening in her chest. Erasing him, like Liu Beifeng and the rest of the sages want to do.
Like Jianzhu wanted to do.
No, Kyoshi, I'm not. I'm talking about letting our friend come back to us when he wants to, not when we demand it. I want the people I care about to have a moment's peace instead of one obsessing over the other. You said he was healthy when you saw him, Rangi said. I don't think we need to worry about his survival. Someone as talented as Yun can flourish anywhere in the Earth Kingdom. I'd stake my honor on him showing up when he's ready. And when he does, we'll take him to task for everything that's happened. And then afterward, she declared with the force of a fresh oath, you, me, and him will go back to Yokoya and eat the biggest dinner Auntie Mui's ever cooked. That should be our plan.
Kyoshi forced a smile. Jianzhu, the tea house in Qinqiao. How Yun had escaped that infernal spirit's clutches to emerge once more into the daylight. It might have been possible to unravel the knot, provided they were still dealing with their old friend. The three of them together, like it was before Avatarhood, severed a corner of the triangle off. She wanted the old days back more than anything else in the world. But deep down, she was afraid of a truth the world kept pushing on her. Kyoshi rarely got what she wanted, if ever. Rangi saw she wasn't getting through. She decided on a different tack, coming closer with a hint of sway in her hips.
You know, the party's not for a few hours.
Her voice grew heated and breathy. She reached out and ran her thumb and forefinger lightly over the lapel of Kyoshi's tunic.
I have an idea how to get your mind off your troubles until then.
A dumb grin spread across Kyoshi's face. She leaned down so Rangi could brush her lips against her ear.
Stance training,
Rangi whispered. Her grip on Kyoshi's clothes suddenly turned into a grapple. In one swift motion, she kicked Kyoshi's feet wider and forcibly bent her knees into a deep hinge.
Do you know how easy it was for me to pull you off balance at the gate?
Rangi yelled.
You haven't been practicing. I thought I could trust you not to go soft in my absence, but I was wrong.
Kyoshi stuttered in dismay.
But I thought we were... What we do without guidance defines who we are.
Rangi seemed determined to flay those months of missed exercises out of Kyoshi's hide, one way or another.
20 minutes without a break, or I bust you back to square one of your training. You'll be doing hot squats with 10-year-old academy washouts. You want that, huh?
As the burning began to spread through her legs and lower back, Kyoshi grasped her mistake in coming here. Reuniting with Rangi meant having to deal with the cruelest and harshest person she knew. The Avatar's firebending Sifu.
Lower! Rangi bellowed.
The performance. Kiyoshi stepped out of the dressing chamber feeling readier for the trials ahead. She'd grown more skilled at wielding the many layers of her outfit and could pull them on without assistance now. As she entered the bedroom, she cinched her sash as if buckling down a shield. Rangi waited for her in an overstuffed throne-like chair.
You've made alterations, she said,
eyeing the sections where the colors were slightly different from her memory. I kept mending the original fabric, but eventually it took too much damage. I picked out new patterns I liked and had some pieces replaced. Despite Kiyoshi's ill repute, the best tailors in Ba Sing Se had tripped over their own feet for a chance to dress the Avatar. Free advertising was still free advertising. As she took Kiyoshi in, Rangi landed on a detail that made her frown.
You kept the chainmail liner, though. Made it heavier.
The comment was loaded. Kiyoshi could see the thoughts running through Rongi's head. What kind of dangers have you been putting yourself through without me? She tried to say something that might relieve her friend's worry.
Safety first?
Rangi sighed.
Kiyoshi, it's more than that. You're the guest of honor tonight. You could have worn the finest robes in the world, and instead you picked the same clothes you fight in. This is a small informal reception with a handful of guests on the personal invitation of Fire Lord Zoryu. You're not going into battle. You don't have to be constantly at war.
Kiyoshi remembered the last time she'd let herself fully relax without a care. She could relive every detail, all too easily. It had been a sunny afternoon in Zigan Village, made brighter for having survived and scattered the yellowneck menace. Her healed hands smelling faintly of herbal tincture. Kiyoshi walking down the street, side by side with Rangi. And Lek. She often wondered how Rangi felt about those days, whether their time spent with the Flying Opera Company was real, or just a mantle to be cast off on the way to proper avatarhood. Would Rangi mention the rest of Kiyoshi's bending masters during the party? With their exploits in the Daofei town of Hujiang, their illicit raid on Governor Tay's manor, make for an amusing story? Or would Rangi pretend their gang never existed? That journey certainly hadn't lasted long in the grand scheme of things. Kiyoshi cleared her throat of a welling, thrashing bitterness. I suppose you're not going to let me wear my bracers, then.
Of course not. We'll get you some gloves if you want, but in this country, your hands are nothing to be overly surprised about. Half the attendees tonight have dueling scars hidden here and there underneath their clothes.
You don't. Rangi's skin was unmarred everywhere Kiyoshi had been lucky enough to see it. Rangi snorted.
That's because I don't lose duels.
She pushed herself out of the chair and twirled, swishing her dress so she could inspect her own hem from all sides. Rangi wore a formal silk gown that gave her the swept, elegant appearance of a stamen emerging from a flower of blood-red petals. She looked lovelier than a garden after a brisk rain.
I know it sounds frivolous and wasteful, but appearances matter here in the palace, Rangi said. Fire Nation nobles dress and act to represent their clan affiliation and rank. Our peers notice our smallest choices and assign meaning and intentions to them.
She smoothed a crease in Kyoshi's skirt.
Deep in the bowels of the Earth Kingdom, no one was watching us. That's how we got away with half the antics we did. Here in the Fire Nation, everyone is watching you. I want you to remember that. Everyone is watching.
Kiyoshi's stomach gurgled from the mounting stress. So it's not going into battle, she said. It's worse.
Rongi didn't disagree.
Your clothes will pass for now, but as the festivities progress, you should choose different looks. And it goes without saying, but no face paint during the length of the holiday.
Kiyoshi was going to protest, but Rongi poked her in the chest.
The paint is for pulling jobs with our sworn brothers and sisters, she whispered,
her eyes glistening with memories.
Not for mingling among abiders and square folk who don't understand the code.
Kiyoshi stared at her. Then slowly, deliberately, she enveloped the smaller girl in her embrace and kissed her on the forehead. Rongi squeezed back tightly. There should have been no doubt in Kiyoshi's mind. The firebender hadn't officially taken the oaths, but the Flying Opera Company were her friends, too. And Rongi's friends were as sacred as honor to her. Kiyoshi had gone so long without her center, she almost forgot what it felt like. Rongi made her human again, balanced and whole.
You better get your fill of this now, Rongi murmured as Kiyoshi brushed her lips against her. When we're in public, you cannot touch my head or my face or my hair.
But those were Kiyoshi's favorite parts. Really? You've always let me. Rongi unraveled herself from Kiyoshi and fixed the arrangement of her hairpins.
That's because back in the Earth Kingdom it didn't matter. But here, touching someone's head outside of your closest family is one of the most disrespectful gestures imaginable.
It's best if you avoid touching anyone in general, including me. I hate it as much as you do, but now that we're actually inside the gates of the palace, we have to follow decorum.
She eyed Kiyoshi with suspicion, having been on the receiving end of many kisses to the scalp due to their height difference.
I mean it. Hands off from the neck up.
I get it, I get it.
A knock came from outside the room.
Avatar, Mistress Rongi, it's time to go,
Jinpa called. From his carefully measured pitch, it was obvious he was trying to give them as much clearance as possible. They joined him in the hallway. The monk had chosen the version of air nomad traditional robes that pinned up at one shoulder and left the other uncovered. His arm and the side of his torso were exposed in a bare sweep down to his waist, revealing a surprising set of muscles on the lanky young man.
What?
Jinpa said at their silence.
Too pastoral?
Rongi shrugged.
Usually people don't go shirtless in the royal palace, but there's bound to be exceptions for national dress. It's fine.
Kiyoshi was glad her fans had escaped commentary. They rested in her sash, passable as court fashion unless she thumped someone with their heavy weight. It was ironic that she first thought them less useful than a blade. She'd need the comfort they provided, given the daunting task ahead. She exhaled through gritted teeth.
All right, let's go meet the Fire Lord.
You two are worthless, Kiyoshi whispered, doing her best to direct her ire equally between Rongi and Jinpa, who kneeled on either side of her. You're both fired. Lord Zoryu promised me it would be 20 to 30 people at maximum, Rongi said through a tightened smile. A small gathering. Does this look like a small gathering to you?
Over 500 pairs of golden eyes stared at the Avatar and her companions as they perched on a raised dais that had been erected with unbelievable speed in the same formerly empty gardens they'd observed from above on Yingyang. It seemed like the entire assembled nobility of the Fire Nation was present, standing at attention, watching Kiyoshi, their one and only objective. In a banked row off to the side, percussionists bellowed over their mallets, thundering against drums the size of wine tuns. Erhu players sawed at their instruments with such ferocity that a pile of destroyed bows lay behind them. They tossed the casualties of their performance over their shoulders and drew fresh ones from nearby quivers without missing a beat. The speed and martial intensity of the music was at odds with the calm, almost meditative stillness of the listeners.
Kiyoshi wouldn't have known if they were enjoying it if not for the slight approving nods she caught here and there from the members of the court nearest her. She should have known something was wrong from the start.
Chancellor Dairin had ambushed them outside their quarters and whisked them through a series of baffling passages, explaining there had been a last-minute change to the program. Now here they were, being deafened and honored in equal measure. Having supported a few grand events as a servant, Kyoshi knew that hosts only pulled out the stops like this if they had something to prove. But there was nothing for the Fire Lord to be insecure about, unless he thought she was evaluating him on how lavishly he feted her. She would assure Lord Zoryu this kind of reception was unnecessary if she ever made it to his side. Right now, the Fire Lord was very far away. On the other side of the Sea of Nobles, nested on a platform that mirrored Kiyoshi's. In the distance, she could only make out the gold-on-black edging of the royal armor shoulder pieces he wore over his robes, and a couple of his most prominent features. She could tell the Fire Lord was a young man with a pointy chin and a tall forehead, and that was about it for now. Squinting for more details would have been rude and detectable by the entire gathering. To make matters more uncomfortable, Liu Beifeng was here, of all people. The old man sat near the edge of the crowd on a folding stool. He was surrounded by a small group of Earth Kingdom sages. Based on the faces she recognized, they appeared to be handpicked solely on the criteria of who disliked Kyoshi the most.
"I'm sorry, Avatar," Jinpa said.
He shifted on his knees, not used to the position, compared to the way air nomads sat cross-legged to meditate.
"None of my sources indicated there would be an Earth Kingdom delegation. I'll try to keep them from troubling you with petty requests."
The performance ended in a crashing halt, the musicians shouting at the top of their lungs one last time in unison. The ones who were sitting to play leaped to their feet, their arms spread wide, and the drummers held their sticks over their heads like victory flags. They posed for a moment, breathing heavily. The crowd responded with polite applause that ended equally abruptly. If the performers were disappointed by the muted response, they didn't show it. They began packing up their instruments without a word, while the assembled nobles turned to each other. Ear-splitting music was replaced by the murmurs of delicate conversation. "That's it?" Kiyoshi asked, her words suddenly too loud. She looked behind her to see Dairin motioning the three of them to get off the platform. They joined the chancellor on the ground level. "What happens now?" she asked him.
"According to palace garden party etiquette, now you mingle in the general direction of the Fire Lord," Dairin said, as tense as Auntie Mui before a banquet.
His mustache wiggled from the strain.
"He will do the same to you. This allows for the two of you to encounter each other as equals, as perfectly as two leaves drifting together on the surface of a pond. This method of reception is one of the highest honors the ruling family can grant a guest. It is beyond my station to linger at your side."
"Okay," Kyoshi said. The objective was straightforward. "Go talk to the Fire Lord." "Got it."
"No,"
Rangi said, already knowing what Kyoshi was thinking.
"You can't go right to Lord Zoryu, or else that would be rude to the other guests."
Behind the cover of the platform, she hastily adjusted Kyoshi's lapels and sash, brushing lint and garden pollen off the fabric.
"So I have to chat with everyone I bump into?"
No. Only certain individuals here have enough status to speak in your presence.
Kiyoshi was getting desperate. How will I know who they are?
Those with the right to approach the Avatar by themselves will introduce those who do not, Rongi said. Remember, between Fire Nationals, higher rank always introduces lower rank. The introduction is the pivotal juncture that sets the tone for the rest of the conversation.
She saw the anxiousness in Kiyoshi's face.
You may directly address whomever you want without preface, up to and including the Fire Lord. To be greeted by the Avatar herself is a great blessing. But I strongly recommend you reserve that honor for Lord Zoryu. Jinpa and I will be by your side, but we won't necessarily be able to speak unless the situation allows it.
There was so much to remember. I'm going to die here, aren't I? Kyoshi said with a groan.
Don't worry, Avatar, Jinpa said. He stepped forward and rolled his shoulders. I've failed you once tonight as your chamberlain. It won't happen again.
Despite his bravery, Jinpa was the first to fall. As they entered the crowd, a little circle of courtiers interested in meeting an air nomad for the first time quickly isolated him from the group. Apparently, speaking to an airbender was fair game for most of the attendees. They had to leave him behind, trying to answer questions about the Western Air Temple and its unusual upside-down architecture. Kiyoshi assumed he was improvising many of the inner details, given that the Western Temple housed nuns only. Her exalted status as the Avatar kept people from approaching her, but not from scrutinizing her. The court made sure to provide a respectful amount of physical space, creating a little bubble that moved with Kiyoshi and Rongi at its center, which only made the glances over the tops of their glasses, the sideways stares, the lulls in conversation as they passed, more obvious. It was deeply unsettling.
Kiyoshi found her pulse rising, a mindset of neutral Jing failing to calm her. She had to distract herself by observing them back, taking mental notes the same way she did on her patrols through dangerous territory.
This was the first time she'd seen so many high-ranking Fire Nationals in one place. The nobility of this country favored more understated fashions than their counterparts in the Earth Kingdom, choosing red-on-red patterns for their robes and gowns. The broad expanse of their shoulder pieces seemed like the most common way they expressed their associations. She could see subtle geometric sigils imprinted on the swaths of fabric or simple renditions of native flowers and animals. One particular image she noticed again and again was the stone camellia, in small bunches or large asymmetrical designs, or used as delicate edging. A good quarter of the attendees were wearing some form of it, by far the largest group. Noticing she was outnumbered by a particular faction set the hairs on Kiyoshi's neck prickling before she tamped down the worry. She was among Fire Nation nobility, not in a back alley about to get jumped by triad hatchet men. The flower must have had a link to the departed Chaedu as she'd seen in the gallery, and the partygoers wore it out of respect. Servants passed by them as smoothly as clouds, offering morsels of food so spiced that the drifting aromas nearly made Kiyoshi sneeze. There were skewers of hippo oxtail, rolls of ocean kumquat, and slivers of fish of all sorts from waters near the islands and from rivers so far away they would have had to make the journey here packed in ice. Kiyoshi declined to eat out of nerves. This was how much she'd changed since becoming the Avatar, refusing food. Younger Kiyoshi would have punched her in the nose for that. Rongi watched a few of the platters go by.
That's odd.
That's odd was now their official motto for the trip.
What is it? Kiyoshi asked. There's no stock-nose mushrooms. They're a traditional festival of Sito food,
The mushrooms grow on overcrowded ears of grain, so they're symbolic of a good harvest. I don't see them anywhere. So?
Rongi turned to her with the utmost gravity.
Kyoshi, this is the royal palace. If we don't have them, no one in the country has them. This is not an auspicious sign for the holiday.
The slight pout on her lips that she was doing her best to fight was adorable. Rongi always tried so hard to hide her foibles, as if liking certain things was unprofessional. Knowing that she had a weakness for a particular snack made Kyoshi want to squeeze her tight. The next time the two of them visited Yokoya, she'd ask the remaining kitchen staff to find some stock noses and cook them however they did in the Fire Nation.
Avatar!
Came a squawk from somewhere around Kyoshi's belly. She looked down to see Liu Beifeng delivering a curt bow. Despite age confining him to a seat on the other side of the crowd during the concert, he'd appeared in front of her like he'd stolen the secrets of dust-stepping from the Flying Opera Company. The old man must have wanted a transaction. Only business could make him so positively spry.
Master Beifeng, Kyoshi said. She nodded slightly. Liu was as high up in the Earth Kingdom hierarchy as a person could get without being a king, so this encounter was probably within the rules of decorum.
It's good to see you. How are your grandchildren?
A large flying boar symbol had been embroidered onto Liu's robe in an attempt to conform to Fire Nation clan customs, but it fell short in tastefulness.
With his bony fingers, Liu picked a loose silk thread off the sewn animal and scowled. Somewhere, a tailor was going to lose their job.
Numerous and unpromising,
he said, flicking the thread to the ground.
What I wouldn't give for a talented leader to be born into my family, or a child with a good head for numbers. I would take a halfway decent earthbender at this point. With the way things are going, the Beifeng name threatens to slide into obscurity.
Would that children were fit to their parents' needs, Kyoshi said, the words coming out like ground glass through her teeth.
Liu and the other sages only knew that she was an orphan and were content to leave it there. The tap of Rongi's toe against the back of her foot let Kyoshi know that she was likely turning red and betraying her anger. This is why I need the makeup, she thought.
Yes, well put,
Liu said. He gestured to another Earth Kingdom man by his side. This person was younger, in his 40s, and had obviously tried to coordinate his green and yellow outfit to complement Liu's.
This is Governor Xing of Jintong Province.
Liu's hanger-on from the Earth Kingdom didn't bother with niceties. He pushed closer impatiently, nearly jostling a waiter trying to serve small vials of plum wine.
Avatar, I have a grievance. The misinformation you sowed among my people during your last visit to my lands has damaged the workings of law and order.
Kyoshi picked up the way Liu's eyes flashed at her. Good leaders do not stir the pot. They do not cause disruptions. The old sage valued stability above all else, and several of Kyoshi's recent escapades in the Earth Kingdom did not fit his definition of conduct becoming of an avatar. Kyoshi sorted through her mental notes. Jintong Province was close to Siwang, a dusty scrubland that was relatively unproductive and difficult to grow crops on. But that didn't mean someone couldn't try to exploit it.
Ah, she said. Governor Xing, now I remember. You were buying land at distressed prices from peasants who couldn't till their fields because of Daofei raids, forcing them to later work for you as indentured laborers on the farms that used to be theirs.
The exactness of her terms surprised the older men. She wasn't supposed to say such unpleasant facts out loud in polite company. She was supposed to allude to them, dance around the matter, peck at it like a small feeding bird.
Hmm,
Lu muttered.
That's a tad different from the way you phrased it to me, Xing. You told me you were paying good money to keep your lands free of bandits.
I took care of the Daofei in the area, Kyoshi said. And once I finished, I told the farmers that I considered ownership of the land reverted back to the state it was in before the Emerald Claws first set foot in Jintong. I undid the problem and its aftershocks, both.
I had binding contracts on those lands, Xing said. I purchased them legally. I have the documentation.
Kyoshi thought for a moment. Here was where an avatar of old, skilled in diplomacy like Sito and Yang Chen might offer him something in return to soothe tempers and save face. But she couldn't bring herself to try to imagine fitting compensation. Why exactly did Xing, a powerful man, deserve to exploit a catastrophe and become richer at the expense of his citizens? She found the words marching forth from her lips with ease. Well, Governor, if you value business terms so much, I can send you a bill for pacifying your province. Given the results, my cost would be the equivalent of supplies and wages for a medium-sized army. I'd need the payment immediately, in a lump sum. Behind her, Kyoshi heard the nose snort of Rongi trying desperately not to laugh. Xing looked like he needed to suck on a wood frog.
These are the tactics of an urban racketeer, he shrieked. When they said you were a criminal, I didn't believe the rumors at first, but clearly, Xing,
Lu snapped.
Mind how you speak to the Avatar. We are not in our homeland.
The governor of Jintong wilted at Lu's rebuke. There was an uncomfortable pause. The nearby crowd watched with barely hidden glee as the noisy Earth Kingdom folk had it out with each other. Lu sighed and shook his head. His hunch seemed to have taken on a steeper angle.
I'm afraid I must retire early from the festivities, he said. Old bones and whatnot. It was a delight, everyone.
He shuffled back toward the garden entrance of the palace. Xing followed a few steps behind, somehow looking much worse for wear than the elderly man. Kiyoshi could easily see Lu cutting Xing loose from the Beifong circle of influence after tonight, not out of any moral obligation, but for being a bad investment who'd gotten on the Avatar's wrong side and embarrassed the Earth Kingdom outside its borders. She might have just ended the man's entire career. Once they were alone again, Rongi cleared her throat and leaned in. As much as I love watching you verbally set people on fire, be a little more careful. That same conversation between two fire nationals could have ended with an Agni Kai. Kyoshi knew she wasn't kidding. The Flying Opera Company used to tease Rongi mercilessly about honor and other Fire Nation values back in the isolated depths of the Earth Kingdom. But that was when she was the only firebender for hundreds of miles around. Here, Kyoshi and Xing were the odd ones out. The stifling atmosphere made it easy to believe that no interaction was too small to have meaning.
This isn't a game, Rongi reminded her. This is a garden party. There are stakes.
I'll do better next time, Kyoshi said.
Good, Rongi mustered herself. Because here comes my mother.
The Headmistress. Heiran's arrival was preceded by a hush through the nearby crowd. Lower-ranked nobles parted to let the woman who'd taught their daughters pass through. Some of them gave her crisp salutes, a reminder Rongi's mother had also been a high-ranking military commander at one point. She returned the gestures with glances and nods. Kyoshi swallowed hard. Even without the complications of her early avatarhood, this was a reunion with someone designed from the ground up to pass judgment and call the unworthy from her presence. Heiran approached slowly, using a cane to assist her steps. she hadn't bothered with dressing in finery. The stark parade uniform she wore enhanced the deliberateness of her movements. Her once solid black hair was mingled with strands that had turned gray and wiry. She looked older. That meant finally looking like Rongi's mother, without a doubt, instead of her twin. The blaze in her eyes was still there, as clear and piercing as ever. Kyoshi bowed, if only to escape the woman's gaze for a moment.
"I am grateful to see you in better health, headmistress," she said.
"And a little surprised, it seems," Heidon said.
Kyoshi tensed up. She'd made the wrong face. Again, this was why she needed her makeup, to hide the nuances of expressions she couldn't control. Heidon brushed her own comment away.
"You don't have to pretend. I can't believe I'm up and about either. They're miracle workers, Water Tribe healers."
She sighed unhappily.
"I can barely firebend right now, though. It's like being a child again, having to learn the basics and build my strength back up. A fitting punishment, given what I put Yun and you through."
Kyoshi winced. A firebending teacher of Heidon's caliber losing her abilities felt like a tragic loss for the whole world.
"I still haven't discovered who was responsible for this crime," Kyoshi said. In her opinion, the official inspectors had dropped the case prematurely. They'd found no records or messages as to why so many influential members of the Earth Kingdom had gathered in Yokoya that day. But that was suspicious in itself.
"But I swear, I won't let it drop."
Pain coursed through Heidon's face.
"Kyoshi, it was him. It was Jinju."
It took a while for the dam to give way. Kyoshi's old hatred, long stilled, came rushing over the banks once more. She turned to Rongi, who gave her a grim nod.
"The victims in Yokoya were his enemies come to oust him as the Avatar's master,"
Heidon said. Her voice was strained and hoarse.
"He caught me and himself in the attempt. Whether it was out of sloppiness or to throw off suspicion, we'll never know."
Kyoshi closed her eyes and gripped the handle of one of her fans. It took so long for the threads of mistakes and monstrous deeds to stop weaving into the future, to just tie themselves off and end. Maybe they never ended. A different pattern hung out of reach. One where Kelsang was alive, Heidon had never been poisoned, and Lek was still sulking in a run-down tea house in Chameleon Bay, longing for a bison.
"I'm sorry," Kyoshi said.
"If I had been able to create a flame when you tested me?"
Remembering her past failure in front of Heidon hurt all the more, considering how much Kyoshi enjoyed the act of firebending these days. The flames came easily now when she danced with Rongi's native element, and yet she had been so lacking back then. Kyoshi thought often about that little ball of tinder she had failed to set alight. Sometimes it drove her to tears. What could have been saved but for her weakness?
"I'm sorry," she repeated.
Heidon laughed, a short, harsh bark.
"You're sorry. You're apologizing to me."
The indomitable former commander began to shudder. She pressed her fingers to her eyes so hard that it looked like she was trying to gouge them out. Rongi was at her side in an instant, steadying her. The bystanders were as surprised as Kyoshi at the show of emotions, but Heidon collected herself before she shed any tears. Kyoshi had a feeling this was the furthest extent of the woman's vulnerability.
"Kyoshi, I am the one who needs to apologize,"
Hadon declared with nary a crack in her voice.
I am so sorry for what I did to you, and for what I allowed Genju to do to you and Yun. I could have put a stop to what was happening. I could have seen things clearly if I'd wanted to see them. I can never make this right.
Kyoshi looked at Rongi's hand on her mother's elbow. It was a small gesture, the slightest touch, but it made Kyoshi think of the way she had wrapped her arms around Kelsang once as he wept on an iceberg over his mistakes. It was hard to tell, given their stern, unyielding expressions. But here was a woman racked by guilt, being comforted and supported by her loving daughter.
Your recovery is a good start, Kyoshi said.
Hadon looked at her, puzzled.
Toward paying your debt to me, Kyoshi clarified. What I demand from you, headmistress, is your continued good health. I'll accept no less than what I'm owed.
Kyoshi, this isn't the time for jokes.
She's not joking, mother.
Rongi's smile overflowed with love for them both.
She's simply like that. Now swallow your pride and accept the decree of the Avatar.
Hadon laughed again, though there was no gladness in the sound. She patted her daughter's hand.
I'm all right. Go find Sifu Atuat. I need a moment alone with Kyoshi.
Rongi clipped her heels together and left to retrieve whoever this Atuat person was. Hadon gathered herself and stared down Kyoshi. How she managed to do that from her lower height was a mystery.
Kyoshi, I want you to know something, she said.
Hadon's voice lost what was left of its earlier emotion and turned into a cold, unflinching whisper, simply measuring and reporting the dimensions of the truth.
I would kill him. I would kill him for what he did to you and Kelsang and Yun and my daughter. I want you to know that, Kyoshi. I want you to believe it. If he were here right now, I would kill Genju in front of this entire crowd.
The space between Kyoshi and Hadon changed like steel being quenched, hardening into an ancient and well-understood design. Her true reconciliation with Rongi's mother lay here, not in tearful public apologies.
So would I,
Kyoshi said.
Good girl.
Hadon glanced in the direction her daughter had gone.
Rongi, ultimately she is kind. No amount of drilling or hardship will ever change that about her. Which means there are places she will never go, places that are barred to her. You may have to visit them on her behalf to protect her and others.
Kyoshi still struggled with the actions she took as the Avatar in defense of the world's peace and balance. But protecting Rongi was a matter that turned her into a different being, small and rat-like and vicious enough to live inside a thin shadow. She chose her words carefully to Hadon, filling in the limits she was sure of.
I know exactly what to do with anyone who would hurt your daughter.
Hadon's lips flattened into a line. Kyoshi knew that this was as close to a grin of outright approval as the woman ever gave. They gazed at each other in mutual accord.
The silence was broken by someone accidentally jostling Kyoshi's elbow.
I couldn't remember if you liked plum wine or sorghum liquor.
A short, plump woman in blue robes said to Hadon in a loud, piercing voice. She wielded a glass in each hand, threatening to spill the different colored contents.
So I got both.
Rongi caught up like she'd been chasing the Water Tribe woman through the crowd, instead of retrieving her.
Kyoshi, this is Sifu Atuat, she said. Sifu Atuat is the greatest of the northern healers.
She personally saw to my mother's recovery. We invited her as our honored guest in thanks. While she's here, she's part of our family.
Haydon pushed the proffered glasses away from her face. And I'm still your patient, Atuat. I shouldn't be drinking. The other doctors said it would set back my recovery.
The other doctors are cowards, Atuat said. If your innards start failing, I can simply bring you back to life like I did before.
She turned to Kiyoshi, acknowledging the Avatar for the first time.
I'm that skilled, she said solemnly.
It was a matter of grave importance that Kiyoshi understand the facts.
When the headmistress here arrived at my hospital, she was basically a corpse wrapped in a red shroud. To save her, I picked the pocket of death itself.
Kiyoshi had to check that the good doctor wasn't already drunk. She wasn't. She was just that way.
You must be one of the finest benders in the world, then, regardless of element.
Atuat held up a finger while draining one of the glasses she'd brought for Heiron.
I am, she said once she'd finished it. You know how women in Agna Kala aren't allowed to learn the fighting forms of waterbending?
Kyoshi did not know that about the Northern Water Tribe capital. But no matter. Atuat was going to elaborate anyway.
I say it's the men who aren't allowed to learn healing from me. Any idiot can punch someone with water. I punch dying people's energy pathways with water such that they live for another handful of decades.
Heidon rolled her eyes.
Don't flatter her,
she said to Kiyoshi with the candor that one could only have when talking about a friend. Atuat is arrogant enough without praise from the Avatar. This was astonishing. The former headmistress of the Royal Academy and the mother of Rangi calling someone else arrogant. Kiyoshi looked closer at the woman who warranted such a description. Atuat was a little younger than Heidon and resembled Auntie Mui from the neck down. But there was an edge to her face and light blue eyes that Kiyoshi found familiar. Rangi noticed her trying to place it.
Sifu Atuat is Master Amak's sister, she explained.
So that was it.
Kiyoshi's spirits sank. She hadn't been the slightest bit close to the mysterious, disreputable waterbending master. But she'd been there when he died, stabbed through the back by Tagaka the Pirate Queen's waterbending. With so much blood staining her past, maybe Kiyoshi really was as cursed as parts of the Earth Kingdom claimed.
I'm very sorry about your brother, she said.
Atuat sighed.
Thank you. Amak was never going to have a peaceful end, to put it mildly. But he died protecting people. That's far more honorable than what he was doing before.
Heidon looked like she wanted to change the subject of Master Amak.
Where's this airbender friend of yours? She asked Kiyoshi and Rangi. I should meet him.
Kiyoshi craned her neck, trying to see where they'd left Jinpa. His crowd was even bigger now, making a circle around him. The monk concentrated as he spread his arms wide, performing an airbending feat passed down through the southern temple that levitated him a few inches off the ground without causing a storm in the vicinity. Kiyoshi had once involuntarily lifted herself with a larger version while in the Avatar state, but she couldn't do it under normal circumstances. Jinpa said the party trick had supposedly been invented by Kuruk. It took a lot of skill and had no practical use, so Kiyoshi believed it. As he drifted back to the floor, his audience of nobles clapped for the feat in the exact same manner as they'd done for the riotous music performance. Kiyoshi realized that Jinpa was enjoying himself, showing off for others. He hadn't had a real break the entire time he'd been serving her.
Would anyone like to try?
He said, indicating he could lift a willing volunteer.
Me!
Atuat roared across the party. She hiked up her skirt so she wouldn't trip and marched off with haste toward the air nomad. Hadon pinched the bridge of her nose, a gesture of frustration she shared with Rongi.
I swear, it's like having a sister with no impulse control, she muttered.
She limped after her own doctor, forgetting to say goodbye to her daughter and the Avatar.
The shocking lapse of manners from the headmistress warmed Kiyoshi's heart. She liked Sifu Atuat and her effect on Hadon.
Rongi appeared to share the sentiment.
Sometimes I think making a friend cured her more than anything else, she said.
Does she know about us?
Of course,